So my name is Ian Smith, and I was brought up in the Harvard. We lived in Prince of Wales Road till I was four, and then we moved to the pub known as the Dublin Arms, and I lived there until I was about 16. When as kids we used to play down the river all the time. It was literally a couple hundred yards away from us. We used to nip down through the under the Harvard Bridge and down the Strand, or walk along to the tunnel down, as you head down to the Swansea Station, down the tunnel there past the unit works, and find a way into the river down there, you know, in the back of the works. And it was always like a magnet for us kids. You know, it was dirty, smelly, rats running about the place, and we just loved playing down there. In amongst all the ruins of what was all the industry. I was born in 1955, and apparently the first time I went down there was when I was four and told some of the boys I was going to go fishing, and had all the family out searching for me for the rest of the day, until they didn't find me. I found my own way back home, and you know, getting in loads of trouble over that, you can imagine, at 4 years old. But then again, in different times, there wasn't so much traffic about for a start. Down there, it was desolate. It was just like lots and lots of buglier growing everywhere and derelict buildings. Fun places for kids to play. You know, you've come across all sorts of stuff down there. But we used to go down the river and literally, from an early age, we'd be fishing for eels and things, dig up some ragworm in the mud, playing amongst all the old wrecks of the boats, lots and lots of old bits of boats lying about. Just a bit of cork on a bit of fishing line and a hook, and just dip them in, and anyway, within 2 minutes you'd have an eel or something. And as we got older, I mean, when we were about sort of, I don't know, maybe 12, 13, we used to take inner tubes down and make rafts, and always making rafts. Just go down to the local scrapyard and ask them for some inner tubes. They always give you some, you know, you wouldn't have to buy them or anything. And very often they blow them up as well for us. But if they didn't, we just sort of, blow it up ourselves as hard as we could and jam a bit of mud or something in there just to stop it running out. And get in down by the docks somewhere, usually down by the old pier as the tide was coming in. Get in with the inner tube and just float up the river with the tide, the incoming tide, and then get out wherever we went. It usually covered in mud and grease and God knows what, to be honest. But rafts very often get big inner tubes and get a lorry inner tube or a couple of them and tie them together, a couple of planks over them, and just play in the river all day. It's just excellent fun. I used to fall in before I could swim, fell in loads of times and just scrabbling about something, had to throw me a rope or jump in after me. I remember falling in once when I was maybe about seven, and climbed onto the old, there was an old ship there, it was a metal ship. There were a lot of wooden ones, but there was an old metal one, and we used to love that. And it was fairly close to where the old drawbridge was. And we used to think that was some sort of submarine, to be honest. We thought that was a wreck of a submarine because of the shape of it, looked like a conning tower. And there was a metal ship there, and I climbed onto that one day and fell in. And I think I was, quite close to drowning. Somebody dived in and pulled me out, an older boy. That was a bit scary. And very often we'd be frightened to death by a seal or something that would come up the river. And we'd, jump out of our skins, what the heck's that like? Fishing down there, we used to fish for mullet as well, and right up as far as White Rock, we could see the mullet coming up, even though the water was still quite dirty in those days. Still a lot of fish and life in the river. And you could just follow the fish up and try and catch them, nets and all sorts of things. Go home with a couple of mullet. And my grandfather, who was from the Faroe Islands, would cook anything I took home, basically. Take an eel home, he'd skin it and cook it and fry it, and we'd sit down and eat it together. But anything we caught would go back up there. Funny, we used to play in the old White Rock area as kids. We'd go down past, the old ICI Club, as it was. There's a footbridge down to that, and sneak across the railway tracks, get down to where the river was. Always crossing the railway tracks. Got arrested once for trespassing when I was 10 on a Sunday. Hauled down to the station, the High Street station, with the railway police, and taken home in the back of a car, then to my mother and father. We used to go down and cross there, make some sort of raft and get across the river. very often at low tide you could just walk across. There was so much, you know, silt and stuff in it in those days. And play in the old derelict buildings, and it seemed as if we were playing, you know, just about the time when space travel was coming in, and there was Firewall XL5 was on the telly, and we used to think that we were on Mars, because the colour of the rock, you know, it was like, it was bright orange in places and bright yellow in other places, sulphur, and, you know, we should just imagine that we were on the moon or on another planet, really, and play all these space games, and that's actually stuck with me all my life, you know, it's the fact that it was there, it was, you know, I dread to think what we were playing, and it was just chemicals some days, you know, and I know some other kids would take stuff home, you know, and then, what have we found today, you know, big tin of bright yellow chemicals, it probably sulfur, and it wouldn't do you any good at all, and all sorts of things, and collect anything, really, you know, old tools and things you find, probably, as maybe, harking back to why I became a museum curator, I don't know. We used to pick things up and just take them home for our mothers to check them out again. what else did we do down there? We used to, as I say, it's sort of been connected with me all my life, because when I left school at 18, I took a year out from going to university. And I never went to university when I was young, actually. But a year out, and I got a job in Yorkshire Imperial Metals. That was 1973. And I was assistant personnel manager then, straight into work with a guy called Frank Knowles. So I actually worked in the Harvard Copper, which was called Yorkshire Imperial Metals in those days. I went through being a subsidiary of ICI to IMI Industries, and worked there for about 18 months, and actually got to see a lot of the works, because I was working in the personnel department. We were involved with health and safety, and, you know, just all sorts of things to do with the guys working there. So we used to go and speak to somebody in the cast house and make sure they weren't burning their feet, or all sorts of things, metal splashing about all over the place. And we're down to the rolling mills and, you know, the noise of that, the engineering department where all they were milling all the different things. And one of the worst places was actually where they had the acid baths, where they were actually cleaning the plates up. And they'd be dipping the finished plates, the rolled plates, into the acid baths, and the fumes coming off those things. And I remember going down there one day and walked into the place, and your eyes would start streaming straight away, and no ventilation. Like, you know, boys, you've got to open the windows and doors here. Oh, it's too cold. We can't have those open. You know, you've got to keep it's freezing. This stuff will kill you. No, it's fine. It's fine. You get used to it. I mean, that was absolutely, you know, horrific place as far as I was concerned. Gave that a wide berth. Rolling mill was very noisy, very hot as well in the hot parts. You know, there was a hot rolling mill and a cold rolling mill. And when that was going full blast, if they had a big order on, that was really, really some place to see. And of course, the cast house was almost like going back in time. I told you, you know, when first day I walked through the gates, it was like sort of stepping back 100 years almost. Nothing had changed. The old lanes in between all the buildings, and the noise and the dust and the smell, and it just really sort of got you that you were part of this thing which had been there for like hundreds of years, really, and you just sort of continuing on with it. We used to get, because of the job I had, I used to have access to lots of different places, and I can remember going into the main office building by the gate, which had been, wasn't used anymore as a main office. That moved down into sort of prefab offices down at the bottom of the hill. But it was still almost as if it had been left there in maybe 1950. You know, there was a big boardroom with a massive table, and on pictures on the walls, maps and things of the world, and, you know, where all the copper was going and all this. And down in the basement, something which really horrified me. I went down there one day to see what was down there, and it was like files and files of all the different workers. And he sort of pulled out a folder, and in this folder was the guy's birth certificate, and then, you know, his marriage certificate, if he'd gone off to fight in the war, all that diesel was in there. And then in the end, the last thing was just like his death certificate. There was somebody's whole life in this folder, and that really, I don't know, sent a shiver down my spine to think that somebody could actually just be sort of put in a folder and that was it, like, you know, that was the sum of their worth, like, was in there. Because we had lots and lots of men who actually worked there for over 50 years. You know, long service people. They'd, you know, started as a 13-year-old boy as an apprentice or, you know, whatever, and worked there the whole life. Time off to go to the war was actually sort of taken into account. So if they went to fight for their country, when they came back, that was added back into their long service award and things like that.
Well, fantastic. It's really difficult not to say anything.
Yeah. if you want me to ask any specific questions, or I could just answer them if you want.
Oh yeah. Well, another thing I think what we can do with this, so there are at least three areas in there. You've got sort of childhood playing on the river, sort of first working on the plant and stuff about the working environment. So we can split those into chunks. The Ian Smith archive,
right?
Or whatever it is. That sounds really great. You told us a bit more about when you were living in a pub. You told me about sort of lining up on the side of the road waiting for the fight to start.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, of course, we moved to the Dublin Arms when I was four, and it was the old pub then. The building that's there now is CK Supermarket, and that was actually built while we were living there. So we lived in the old pub till I was about, till I was about 14. So maybe 1970, they sort of half built the new pub and then knocked the old pub down and then finished the new build. So we moved into the new build. But the old pub is ancient. It's probably, I would guess, round about the turn of the century, the 1900s, it was built. It had big sort of round sort of picture windows in the attic, and really down in the cellar there was all sorts of things going on down in the cellar, and there were little tunnels going off and all sorts of things. But it was great because the characters there, you know, when we moved in, it was 1959, and it was a different age. You know, it's quite a while ago now, but it was even a different age then. And we used to have, I can remember we moved in there, and there was a big sort of coal sort of stove in the middle of the bar. And we're there one day, my granddad shouting and bawling at somebody, and somebody come in and put a couple of kippers on top of the stove. You know, in the middle of the day, just plonked a couple of kippers on the stove to warm through while he was waiting for his pint. And they would, you know, I remember Saturday night, we were just, this is the early 60s, maybe I was about 7, so 1963, 64, and Saturday night in the summer, all the kids would sit on the wall opposite the pub and just wait for the fight to start. You know, 10 o'clock, the singing would be going, and all of a sudden it would go quiet, deadly, you know, and there'd be a shouting, a couple of raised voices, and then it would spill out onto the street. And there'd be people throwing punches, and I remember one guy ripped a drain pipe off one time to clobber a few other people, and they were cast iron drain pipes, they weren't the plastic ones. And the Black Maria would be waiting down the bottom of the road. It'd be about 50 yards away down with a police box on the Harvard Bridge. Wouldn't do anything, the fight would be going on. And then after a bit, they would all die down and the people sort of, you know, dusting themselves off. And then the Black Maria would come up and throw them all in the back of the van and take them all off to the station. But all the kids, we'd all be sitting there waiting with a bag of crisps and a bottle of pop or something, you know, and just waiting for it to kick off. And it was regular every Saturday night. So you would just... you can't imagine it. They'd all shake hands next day, and that would be it, like, you know. And of course, Sunday we were closed in those days, but you know, we'd have the back door open, and the same boys would come back the next morning, you know, 11 o'clock for a freshener, and we'd all be coming in, and they'd all be going quite quiet now, and the policeman would be walking down the hill, everybody, quiet now, the policeman's going past. But what they didn't know, he was going round to the back door as well for a pint. So they didn't actually realise that in the bar.
Oh, right, so your dad was that the only pub he had?
No, he had, we were tenants in the Dublin, and then he became the manager when they built the new one. And then they asked him if he'd take over the Hanbury in the Kingsway. And we went there for a bit, and then we ended up in the King's Arms in High Street. So we did quite a few pubs.
Really sort of about how you used to get to work, because I'm not sure if you were in the habit or if you moved into Swansea then. Just wondering how you got to work in White Rock.
Yeah, well, by the time I went to school in Geneva, and we by this time we were living in the Hanbury in the Kingsway. So I used to get the bus to work. We used to get the bus number 77 bus from the Kingsway up to, it was just past the Mexico Fountain. get off the bus there, just down through the main gate then, and into the works, and bus home. Years later, I did a course to drive a JCB, and got into driving heavy plant and things, and actually went back clearing part, not as far down as White Rock, but we actually cleared all where the Enterprise Zone was, and I was sort of pushing all this stuff around again that I'd been working with and playing with all my life. So I was actually sort of back in it again and digging out trenches through stuff which is stronger concrete. You know, you're digging through stuff, layers and layers of, oh God, I don't know, years and maybe 200 years worth of rusty concretions that had been dumped there. And sometimes the JCB bucket wouldn't look at it. We'd have to get something heavy which would break it up because it was just solid. And you'd also come across bits of piles and piles of what appeared to be black sand. And I don't know where this came from, whether it was used as ballast or what. But it was sometimes you could a lot of iron in it, because you put a magnet to it, it would pick up a lot of the stuff out of it. And we reckon it was probably used as ballast from somewhere, maybe, you know, filled up in a hell of a ship.
Copper slag, probably.
There was lots and lots of copper slag there, but this was different. But yeah, this was just like black sand. It was, you know, really was like black sand. I mean, you know, I've got stacks and stacks of copper slag on my desk, so I know what that looks like. This was completely different. And there was a fair bit of it. It was a mountain of it in one place. I don't know where that had come from. I'm just assuming it may be from, I don't know, somewhere in South America, I don't know.
Do you remember where that solar park it was?
It was, let me think, it was to the north of the railway line, but quite close to the railway line, before it got to the viaduct. Mm. So it was down that end.
That rocks on Callagher, so there's the task we have to sort out. Yeah, if it was.
There's about four or five by the post office area, just as you went round that corner.
The post office was like the modern post office building, right? But it was further down the valley from there. Say, I would guess, nearer the railway line rather than the middle of the, you know, between. We also found lots and lots of old archways there. You know, you'd be scraping the top off, and then you'd come across stone archways and break through, and there'd be like what would appear to be cellars, but obviously at one time you could have walked into these things with lots and lots of 100-weight lumps of lead ingots and all sorts of things down there. You'd find them, we'd be tripping over those, they were everywhere.
That's the old lead zinc smelters, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, let's think that was
about four or five. I mean, you had the Siemens Steelworks about, what should we say, just about where Macro was, and then as the line went round and then curved more northwards, it was just a run of lead zinc type establishments. Yeah. So you probably picked up one of the zinc smelters, because they had lots of barges, and you had these retorts went across to smelt the zinc. It sounds like you might have gone into one of them.
Well, we were the main contractors on the site clearing it. So we worked all over the site, basically. Mm-hmm. And because I was working for the main contractor, I got shunted about all over the place. Mm-hmm. We had subcontractors in doing specific jobs, like knocking the buildings down or with massive D8 bulldozers pushing stuff around. But I actually got to be sort of, you know, working on little bits and pieces and things like that. And of course, because they were the main contractor, they were very, very, how can I say, proactive in collecting the scrap and put it into skips to be carted off and weighed in. So, you know, once somebody came across a hoard of lead, it was sort of straight over and it had to be all bundled off. And you know, we never saw any of that, but that's part of being the main contractor. They got anything they found. Yeah, but this dust really, it wasn't dust, it was sand. It really intrigued me. You know, I did A-level chemistry and I was a bit, you know, what the hell is this sort of thing, you know? Because I'm, you know, warning the people not to go near certain bits and things.
Yeah, obviously. Arsenic smelters and plants as well.
Could have been anything, yeah, all sorts of things there, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the clearance you were doing well in the late 70s?
This was, I guess, yes, late 70s, because it was after Maggie had given it over to be an enterprise zone. So was that 1979 or 80, something like that? It was one of the first things she did when she came into power, wasn't it? Created 10 enterprise zones, I think.
Yeah.
And that was the kickstart of it, if you like. We put the roads in, we cleared the old buildings, but put the roads that are there now, we actually put those in.
So, it was after the Mains were dealing with dereliction project.
Yes, it wasn't during that. It wasn't the Lower Swansea Valley project. You know, I was too young to be involved in that.
So you were at school in Harvard during that?
No, I was in Geneva School by that time, 1967. So I possibly, I might have been still living in Harvard.
Right. Mm. Yeah. Were you involved in the tree planting?
No, nothing like that, no. No.
Yeah, so the guy used to... No, he came to the museum a few years ago. He made a colour Super 8 film. Did you see that?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, I've seen it.
Yeah. I'm not sure where it is now. I can find a copy, I'm sure. But he used to get out of school with his Land Rover and say, can I have office and kids for the day?
Yeah.
And he'd go up on the hill with his office and kids. And then all the time digging holes and planting trees. And in fact, this guy I met, Gary Williams, was one of those kids. He planted trees up there.
Do you know what? I went back there about 2 years ago and I hadn't really looked at the place. And I was sort of just sitting there in the car, I was waiting for somebody. I looked up and it was a massive green. And it really hit me, you know, how green it has become.
Oh, yeah.
But then when Tamina was first started the copper project, I took her up there and showed her around where all the different places where we were at the old ICI club. Mm. And we sort of walked around the back of the ICI club on the bed of the canal and, you know, you can look down into the old engine houses and things. And you notice the trees growing around there, how poisoned they are. And, you know, it's really, comes home to you then, what they're actually growing in, because the bark is falling off and they stunted and there's black bits and all sorts of lumps and bumps growing around them. And that really sort of brings it home what was actually they buried in, what the roots are buried in.
The interesting thing was when they came to do the actual project of digging, they said the pollution levels in the tally went through the roof until they sealed everything off.
Disturbed it.
Because of all the muck that was in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that badly was poisoned. Badly poisoned.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, a before and after picture of the Kilvey Hill, and that was quite unbelievable.
Well, absolutely.
I was talking to a guy from Blind of Mice last year, and he hates the trees since they grew. He can't see the river anymore. So you can't win.
No, you never please everybody.
No.
It's lovely up there now, it's really nice. But saying that, I liked it when it was muddy too.
Yep. Yeah, actually, I've got quite a few diaries of travellers in the 19th and 18th centuries. And a few of those involve trips, especially on the train down the Swansea Valley. So I'm going to have to get somebody to read some of those, I think. But they're sort of very vivid descriptions of the sight and the smell.
Yeah.
One of them, actually, she got to St. Thomas. And she wanted to get off the train, so stayed on it, cancelled her holiday, and left because it was so revolting.
I can remember reading there's an article somewhere that somebody says it's like Hades or coming through hell, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Came across the Harvard and said, it can't be that far from home.
No. Yes, that's it.
Yeah, I put one of the crops on the homepage of the website. And I got plenty more where that came from.
I always remember when I first came down to college back in 77, because I'm from Crewe, I came down the Heart of Wales line because that was the line I wanted to do. So, of course, you've got to run along the Lacher Estuary, you've got that beautiful view of North Gower, and you come into Swansea, and it's most lovely. And then after the interview, I went back via Cardiff, had my first ride on a 125 train. I thought, what is this? It was just that run up to Llansamlet was absolutely disgusting, and that was in the 77. So what it must have been like before, I don't have to think.
It's changed beyond all recognition. Mm. You when I show people pictures of what, so I do talks at schools, and we talk about the changes in Swansea, and they just can't believe it how much it has changed. You know, you'd never credit it really.
Yeah, that's one of the things trying to get across in this project. And so now we're collecting all these photographs of contemporary ones, you can do it, but it's still difficult.
Yeah.
As you look at it, even though sort of, okay, yes, it is the same view from the same place,
yeah.
But I don't believe it.
No.
I just don't believe it could have possibly been like that.
No. And one thing, what struck me when we would dig in there, was how deep these layers were, you know? You keep digging and digging and digging, maybe we had some holes up at 40 feet deep, and it's still becoming the slag and waste, still be in the bottom of it.
Oh yeah, well they reckon dealing with dereliction, now the waste that shifted would have filled Singleton Park with up to 12 feet.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it must have gone for landfill somewhere. I'll have a look in the book, it tells you in there, I just can't remember where it went. But during the war, a lot of the spoil was used to make the foundations of Fairwood Airport.
Well, when I was working for Marion Construction back in the late 70s, we used to use a lot of the red ash in particular, and the footpaths and things, all around Swansea. You know, any tarmac footpaths, we'd probably find red ash under it, which came straight off the site there.
So what would have made it? What, red lead?
No, probably iron oxide.
Oh,
yes. Rust,
yeah.
Is it going to browning red? Or
Yeah. Pinky red, browny red. I can't remember the name of the firm that used to supply it, but they obviously had some sort of loading plant over there.
Yeah.
They'd be loading up on lorries and it would arrive on the back of a lorry and just spread it out and then roll it in and tarmac over it.
Well, if you walk down Clyne Valley now, the stream still runs red.
Yeah. So it's made up. We didn't use it for roads, but we used it for footpaths and things.
Yeah. All right. Well, this has been really good. Superb. You're a good talker.
So the lead and the arsenic inside me.
Well, that's the thing. That was going to be mine. I've had medical checks since then.
Well, the things we used to do, that my father was a pathologist at Morrison Hospital, so he ran the PATH lab there. He used to bring mercury home for us to play with.
Well, we tried to steal a bit from school.
Yeah. Yeah. Didn't do us any harm.
No, exactly.
Oh, that's great. Well, we've got three lots of technology.
Yeah.